Thanks to federal megaspending, the trade deficit has only gotten worse. By Mihai Makovei. An audio Mises Wire narrated by Michael Stack. President Trump's protectionist trade measures against China and other external partners have not caused a reduction of the total U.S. trade deficit. The latter actually grew further as China's exports found indirect ways into the U.S. and massive domestic spending schemes were expanded during the pandemic. Almost 3 years after the Trump administration unleashed the trade war on China, hostilities have not ended, but only entered a truce with the Phase One trade deal signed in January 2020. The U.S. tariff hike on more than $360 billion of Chinese goods has remained in place until today. Washington imposed four rounds of tariffs in 2018 and 2019, with the bulk of the tariffs ranging from 10 to 25% coming into force in September 2018 and September 2019. Beijing has gradually retaliated with tariffs ranging from 5 to 25% on about $110 billion of U.S. products. The difference in the volumes of products targeted by tariffs reflects the unbalanced bilateral trade. The COVID-19 pandemic took the trade war off the headlines, but its economic disruptions prevented China from meeting the condition of the Phase One deal to purchase an additional $200 billion of U.S. products over the 2017 level. Recently, China has approached the Biden administration trying to restart trade discussions, but it seems unlikely that Biden's policy on China would deviate significantly from his predecessors. As a matter of fact, Biden's trade agenda still underlines that China's coercive and unfair trade practices harm American workers, threaten our technological edge, weaken our supply chain resiliency, and undermine our national interests. In addition, the tech war continues as top Chinese tech companies suspected to be affiliated with the military remain blacklisted, and recently the U.S. Senate passed a bill providing $250 billion in subsidies to high-tech sectors competing with China. But Trump's protectionist agenda does not seem to have reached its target, so why continue it? The U.S. trade deficit continued growing. The sharp increase in U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods led to a significant decline in the bilateral trade deficit of about 25%, or $108 billion, from 2018 to 2020. Despite the retrenchment of the deficit with China, the U.S. trade deficit in goods with the world has actually increased by around $35 billion from 2018 to 2020, to a record high, $915 billion. If Trump's protectionist measures appear to have worked with China, they have certainly not reduced the overall trade deficit. The situation worsened in the first quarter of 2021, when the trade deficit widened by almost 50% with China and by more than one-third with the world during the same period in 2020. At the same time, the surplus in the balance of services has shrunk by about 20%, and it seems that the U.S. is heading for a record-high current account deficit in 2021. Chinese exports found an indirect way to the U.S. While the U.S. trade deficit with China was shrinking, its deficit with other Asian economies was expanding almost in lockstep. From 2018 to 2020, the U.S. trade deficit in goods to China declined by about $108 billion, but expanded by about $90 billion with Vietnam, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Korea, Malaysia, and Thailand. Many analysts interpreted this evolution as a readjustment of global value chains and offshoring of production from China to Vietnam, Taiwan, and other Asian peers. Yet the data point to something else. As U.S. imports from other Asian countries grew by about $32 billion in 2019 and another $30 billion in 2020, China's exports to the same Asian economies grew almost in lockstep. This would suggest that China's production has not been relocated to other Asian economies because of the U.S. tariff hike, but that somehow its exports have found an indirect way into the U.S. During the trade war, businesses were obviously eager to find loopholes to avoid exorbitant tariffs without having to shift production, in particular by using transshipment, in which Chinese exports are minimally processed during a brief stop at a third port and then re-exported as non-Chinese product. The U.S. authorities have recognized and tried to reduce this practice, but apparently without much success. Several arguments would support this view. One, despite a drop in Chinese exports to the U.S. of $87 billion in 2019 and another $16 billion in 2020, China's total exports to the world grew by $13 billion in 2019 and another $92 billion in 2020. Two, the structure of China's exports in terms of main products has remained broadly unchanged from 2018 to 2019, not displaying large disruptions following the trade war, according to the OEC. And three, the reorientation of U.S. imports from China to other Asian economies took place very quickly, in a matter of months rather than years, when it would be almost impossible to shift production facilities so quickly from one country to another. It would also be naive to think that much smaller Asian economies such as Vietnam could replace China as the world's manufacturing hub overnight. China still enjoys a large comparative advantage in terms of workforce size and qualification, infrastructure, business environment, and internal market capacity. If some production offshoring from China to low-cost Asian economies took place, it was mainly for low-tech and low-value goods and has not affected China's production and exports much. Manufacturing output continued growing by almost 6% in 2019 and 4% in 2020, while high-tech manufacturing advanced even faster, by 9% in 2019 and more than 7% in 2020. And although China's trade surplus with the U.S. shrunk by $108 billion, its surplus with all its trade partners actually increased by more than $180 billion from 2018 to 2020. This trend strengthened further during the first 4 months of 2021, when China's exports grew on average by 40% from a year before, and the trade surplus increased almost three times to $160 billion. The negative economic impact of strict lockdowns and massive growth stimuli in the U.S. and other advanced economies has undoubtedly contributed to China's brisk export recovery since the summer of 2020. This also brings us to the heart of the problem of the U.S.'s large and persistent current account deficits. Monetary and fiscal expansion caused the U.S. trade deficit. It is actually not bad that private businesses found ways to circumvent Trump's protectionist measures. Austrian economists have always made a strong case against external tariffs, which only favor special interest groups while harming the rest of the community. Industries protected from foreign competition are subsidized by domestic consumers and other producers, who see their sales and export markets shrink. Overall, import restrictions do not increase domestic employment or real wages, but do change the structure of production for the benefit of less efficient businesses, both domestic and foreign. Henry Hazlitt noted that a tariff is not irrelevant to the question of wages. In the long run, it always reduces real wages because it reduces efficiency, production, and wealth. Marianne Rothbard criticized protectionist arguments which were primarily directed at Japan in his days. He also claimed that in the fiat money era, balance of payments deficits are truly meaningless, because they do not trigger gold outflows. Deficits are fully covered by foreigners who invest the dollar acquired with their exports in American assets and debt instruments. Other Austrian economists have more nuanced views about the consequences of the U.S. trade deficits. Joseph T. Salerno rejected the neo-mercantilist hysteria over U.S. trade deficits, too, but stated that the federal budget deficit is the real problem because it diverts foreign capital inflows from productive investment to inefficient government spending. Mark Thornton considered that the U.S. expansionary policies were causing continuous trade deficits and that Trump's fiscal relaxation could only worsen the situation. He concluded that the dollar's world reserve currency status has ruined fiscal responsibility and advocated a return to the classical gold standard as the only way to fix the chronic U.S. trade deficit. Indeed, data show that the monetary creation accelerated notably after the U.S. abandoned the gold standard in 1971, and that soon thereafter the current account balance turned consistently negative. Moreover, the yearly fluctuations of the current account deficit have largely mirrored the annual changes in the money supply, M3. Accelerated monetary creation in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and then again in several rounds since the late 1990s, correlates well with both a widening of the current account deficit and an intensification of business cycles. A similar link can be seen between the massive increase in federal debt and a growing negative U.S. net international investment position, NIIP. Since the 1970s, the U.S. has gradually turned from the world's largest net creditor into its largest net debtor, with NIIP peaking at about $14 trillion, or 66% of GDP in 2020. Total public debt rose to almost double this amount, and its part held by foreign investors exceeded $7 trillion in 2020. Foreign-held public debt was modest, at about 5% of total public debt during the gold standard, but surged above 30% of the total since 2010, and also doubled its share to about 20% of total U.S. foreign liabilities during the last two decades. Overall, foreign dollar inflows that finance public spending rather than bolster private capital accumulation have been on the rise. The U.S. dollar's status as the world's main reserve currency is only a blessing in disguise, because it removes several constraints on implementing expansionary macroeconomic policies. First, with the severing of the U.S. dollar's link to gold, the ability to keep in check not only the trade deficit, but also the artificial credit expansion of fractional reserve banks via gold outflows has been lost. Second, in the case of ordinary fiat currencies, excessive credit expansion and trade deficits trigger a depreciation of the currency, pushing up domestic prices and pressuring the central bank into raising interest rates and reducing credit growth. As the world's main reserve currency, the dollar is partially shielded from this correction mechanism and kept artificially strong. Third, low interest rates and increased external demand for U.S. government securities facilitate larger fiscal deficits financed by monetary expansion. Even if the U.S. trade deficits were fully financed with dollars that return as capital inflows to the U.S. economy, they could still be harmful because the dollar's exorbitant privilege enables excessive money printing and artificially low interest rates. According to the Austrian theory of the business cycle, ABCT, this causes recurrent booms and busts, malinvestment, and overconsumption. Together with higher budget deficits, the latter impact capital accumulation and productivity growth negatively. What may seem an advantage of receiving free gifts from foreigners may actually be a sure recipe for oversized government, over-indebtedness, and a gradual erosion of the structure of production. At the same time, if the U.S. policy stance becomes too expansionary relative to one of its external partners, a loss of confidence in the dollar could threaten its special status. But as long as geopolitical factors continue to play an important role and the U.S. is able to export its policy stance to the rest of the world, only a significant worsening of the economic conditions could change the status quo. Conclusions. President Trump's protectionist trade measures against China and other external partners have not caused a reduction of the total U.S. trade deficit. The latter actually grew further as China's exports found indirect ways into the U.S. and massive domestic growth stimuli were deployed during the pandemic. The chronic U.S. trade deficit is a direct result of the dollar's status as the world's main reserve currency and unabated monetary and fiscal expansion. Resorting to protectionism to solve the U.S. trade deficit is both useless and harmful due to the additional economic distortions it entails. For more content like this, visit Mises.org.